But some past jobs I had, they weren't really looking out for me. They maybe was looking out more for people who they connected with more. Once you start, like, someone like your tweet and you like it back, like, I think that even happened with me and Angie. Like, I noticed, like, I like a couple of her tweets, she liked a couple of my tweets. I'm like, okay, me and Angie are like, maybe she thought I was funny, or we're on the same page with this thought, or whatever. And then after a while, you feel more comfortable to, like, maybe comment on their tweet.
That was actually how I found out. Someone just tweeted about developer advocacy, and I was like, okay, this is actually interesting. Maybe I can become a developer advocate as well. So
I think right now the job market is a little bit tough. But, like, all the stuff we talked about, like, networking, like, keep doing that. Keep putting yourself out there. Keep learning in public. And I think that persistence will eventually pay off.
My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections, to balancing work life, and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out. Hello everyone, welcome to a brand new season of my Tech Journey with Esther podcast. And you know, right from season one up until now, this second season is going to be really amazing, and I'm very excited for all the guests that we'll be having on the podcast. So today I have a very amazing guest with us today. I have Rizel Scarlett joining me today. So welcome, Rizel. It's good to have you. Yeah, so I know when I reached out to you, I was like, I wasn't very sure if you obliged. So when you said you were going to do this, even with your busy schedule, I was very excited. So thank you again for joining me.
Thanks for having me. No, of course. I will always chat with people. It's fun.
All right, cool. So before we jump into the conversation, I would like us to, you know, have a fun icebreaker. So I'd like you to probably tell me two truths and a lie about yourself, and I will identify the lie.
Okay, I gotta think of something. All right, okay. Two truths, and one lie. I've never eaten meat before. I was a pretty good basketball player in high school. And I've been with my current partner for 14 years. Which one do you think is the lie?
Oh my God. That's actually very tough. Okay, the first one was you've never eaten meat, right? You never eat meat. Okay. Okay. The last one is you've been with your current partner for 14 years. What was the second?
That I was a good basketballer.
Okay. I would probably go with, I think the last word, just because I feel like the years, you can change 13, it's easy to just switch years up.
Actually, that was true.
Oh my God.
I'm not good at basketball. I suck at basketball.
Oh, you actually look like a good basketball player somewhere in my head.
If you seen me, you'll be like, no, get her off the court.
I can see you just dunking the balls, but okay, that was actually fun. Okay, nice. So you never eat meat. That's actually a fun fact also. Wow, nice. Okay, cool. So we have Rizel Scarlett here, and I would just like you to introduce yourself to our audience, those watching. Just tell us who you are and a bit more about your story.
Yeah, so my name is Rizel. Like you said, I'm currently a developer advocate at a company called TBD. And TBD is actually a business unit within a larger company called Block. Block owns a couple of companies like Square, Cash App, Tidal, and TBD is included in there. Before that, I worked as a developer advocate at GitHub, and I worked as a software engineer at various startups. And I just love like coding and teaching other people about tech.
Amazing. Cool. I'm sure we'll dive into your journey at GitHub and a lot more later. But I'd like us to start with this. I know I was checking through your articles, and when you mentioned that your career path changed when you realized that, finishing a 4-year degree wasn't financially possible. So what did you plan to study, and what was it like deciding that, okay, tech was going to be your next thing?
Yeah, I was originally studying psychology. I
Okay.
don't think I was like super passionate about it. I was just like, I don't know, maybe I'll study this. But once I got into it, I realized, oh shoot, I don't have enough money for the next semester. I did have a few scholarships, but I didn't have like federal financial aid because I'm not born here, so I wasn't eligible for it. And then people kept telling me, oh, if you actually want to get a job as a psychologist, you gotta go get your master's degree. And I'm like, dang, I do not have money for all this. So I was like, I need to just switch. And the way I picked tech was a little haphazard. I was just Googling what jobs make the most money for the little education, and like different tech jobs kept popping up. So I ended up switching into community college and studying computer information systems.
Wow, okay, that's interesting. So was it like a boot camp, or was actually a structured like curriculum?
It was a structured, community college here in the US is like a 2-year associate's degree. So it was structured, but it wasn't software engineering. It
Wasn't
was
software, okay.
like a IT type of degree. So I started off in the IT realm.
Okay, and how far back was this?
This might have been 2015 or 14 or so that I started studying computer information systems, and then I started working as an IT professional in 2016.
Awesome. So that was like 2 years ish before transitioning into your first job as an IT professional. Okay, that's actually not a bad like time frame, considering when you started up until when you got the job. Because I know a couple of people like me, I attended a boot camp, and some of my colleagues really struggled with getting their first job. So it's interesting to hear you actually say that, it didn't take too long before you actually got your first job. So, okay, talking about GitHub, we are coming into GitHub now. How did you even get the job at GitHub? What was that process like?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, I think it was a little random too, because so after I did, even though it seemed short, I think it was still a lot of different things in between. So after I did IT support at a couple of companies, that's when I did, after that, I did a coding boot camp to learn like how to code.
Okay.
Then I became a software engineer, and I worked as a software engineer maybe for 3 years. And then after that, I was like, I'm not really enjoying the process of being a software engineer. Like, I like coding, but I just didn't like, I don't know, I think I got bored of it, and it was just not like really engaging to me
Okay.
of like just continually working on the same like type of system forever. And I was like, I wish I could do more. And then from there, or while I was working as a software engineer, just to keep myself interested, I had started working at a nonprofit. And I started going to school for computer science. Like, I got my degree in computer science. So that nonprofit, I was like teaching people how to code, and I was like, I like this way better. So that's when I decided, like, I want to switch into developer advocacy because I want to do something where I can like teach people and talk with other people while I get to code and experiment a little bit as well. And there's no like special thing I did for GitHub. I just started applying to a whole bunch of developer advocate jobs. Some people told me, you're not qualified. They're like, you never worked as a developer advocate. Why would we hire you? And so I just kept trying to like take the feedback that I got and improve my resume and my interview skills to make myself seem more like I could be a developer advocate. So by the time I got to GitHub, I think they saw something in me.
Interesting. With what you said, I could really relate to the fact that personally for me, I also kind of got bored coding every day. So I realized that As much as I like coding, I also like to be able to share my knowledge, educate people, teach people. So that was really why I got into developer advocacy as well. And it's interesting that it was pretty similar for you too. Speaking about GitHub, I also want to know, and I think the audience would also like to know more about what was the interview process like at GitHub?
Yeah, the interview process. From what I remember, it's like first I spoke with maybe the hiring manager or HR, somebody. They just wanted to know like about my goals and why I even wanted to be in the role. And then after that, they had me chat with the team. I did like a presentation on something like GitHub related. They wanted to see like how do I teach people? How would I improve things at GitHub? What would I bring to the team? And then they had like this panel type of format where they just asked me a whole bunch of questions, which I did not know the answers to. Like some of them were like, what will you, when you come to GitHub as a developer advocate, what do you want to work on? I was like, I don't know. I was like, whatever you guys are working on, I don't want to work on it. And then after that, I think I spoke with my skip, who would be my skip manager, so my boss's boss. And after that, I had to just wait, and they finally got back to me, and I got the job. So there was no, this was one of the few jobs where there was like no like heavily technical like interview process.
So, with what you said, it was about three steps thereabouts, three first steps thereabouts, right?
So, yeah, I don't, it's very like clouded in my mind, but yeah, I think overall it was three steps, but they were like long interviews. Yeah.
Okay. So, this job at GitHub, I believe it was your first developer advocate job, right?
Yeah, that's
Okay.
correct.
So, when you were looking for the job, was it when you were searching, you found that there was actually something like developer advocacy, or did what led you down this path to developer advocacy? I know you mentioned that you started teaching people, but that term developer advocate, I think it's very niche and not many people even know what that means, except you are in the DevRel space. So how did you even know that developer advocacy was similar to what you were doing in the first place?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it happened because I used to like in the morning before I would go to work, I used to like watch different like YouTube videos or conference talks just to help me like level up so I can like come to work and be at like the same level as my coworkers. Because I was like, I graduated from a coding boot camp. I'm still currently, or at the time, I was currently doing my degree. So I was like, I want to be at the same level. And from there, I started seeing people that were speaking and like teaching and doing like workshops, and I was like, what's their job? And I found out they were developer advocates, especially like I think it really intrigued me when I saw a lot of black people. Like I think I saw Brian Douglas and Angie Jones and Kelsey Hightower, and I was like, how did they get on the stage? What job do they do? So I like looked them up on LinkedIn, and I was like, oh, developer relations, developer advocacy. Never heard of this. And once I, that's like what led me down the path of like researching it.
Okay, that's interesting to know. I realized that a couple of times people that do not know about developer advocacy, they just mention it on Twitter. What exactly is developer advocacy? And then they find out. That was actually how I found out. Someone just tweeted about developer advocacy, and I was like, okay, this is actually interesting. Maybe I can become a developer advocate as well. So I like the fact that you were kind of proactive in pursuing what exactly you wanted to do, like checking people speaking, finding out their role at their companies, and just knowing that this is exactly what I want to do and pursuing that. So that's really admirable.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, you're welcome. Checking also on your articles, because I went through your blog, I did a bit of digging through your blog, and I realized that you also mentioned that, you kind of struggle with stage fright sometimes. I know you've given a good number of talks and, conference talks rather. And one particular one I remember was also the GitHub Universe keynote speech. I watched you actually in 2 years back, and I was like, okay, I was just cheering for you for my TV. And, just knowing that with what you've done, with the stages that you've climbed, you still sometimes struggle with stage fright. How exactly do you combat these nerves, especially when you need to talk, you need to speak to a large audience? How do you deal with stage fright?
I try to practice a lot. That way, if I get nervous, I already know what words I need to say. I make sure I get feedback from different people. Like I make my husband listen to me, or my mom, or my sisters, or whatever, so that they can be like, "You said that way too fast," or whatever. That way, I get the harsh feedback from them first. What else? I also have to kind of tune out the audience. I think when I was getting more stage fright, it's because I kept thinking too much about what's everybody thinking about me? Like that would put the pressure on. But I'm like, they don't really care. Like I have to tell myself, they don't really care about me. They really just care to hear what I'm about to talk about, whatever the topic is. I'm here to educate them. So once I switch myself into that mindset, that's good. And then I usually listen to music too before I go up there and do a talk, so that I don't know, that helps me to zone out. Like if I could zone the audience out, I'm pretty good at just delivering the talk.
Yeah, the listening to music thing is what I do as well. I remember the talk I had last month. I was supposed to go up in like a couple of minutes, so I took my AirPods and I just plugged my ears to get some energy and just calm my nerves and just tell myself that okay, everything is going to be fine. And one of the things I also do is I think I kind of set expectations for myself as well. I tell myself that this is not going to be the best, you know. There's always room for improvement. So that way, I don't put the pressure on myself to kind of be the best. I just know that, okay, I'm going in to give the talk and my next talk will be better than this talk. So that just helps me calm my nerves. So yeah, I can totally relate what you said. And as someone that also goes for events, how do you balance your time? Because I know traveling can be a lot, you know, traveling from one place to the other. How do you balance speaking at events, being kind of an introvert with also life, you know, how do you balance and manage your time?
Yeah, I don't think I've done a good job at this in the past, but I'm trying to do better where I don't sign up for as many events. Maybe I should do once a quarter. I think 1 year I did a conference talk every month, but that was really hard because can't do the rest of the work that I need to do. Like people think that developer advocates were just running around going to conferences, but we gotta write blog posts or write code or help developers in our Discord channel or whatever other responsibilities we have. So I kind of just have to learn to say no. But for the times when I'm not, I just make sure I take enough breaks in between talks. And I don't know if I have more than that.
Yeah, I can imagine. So more or less like trying to say monos to just give yourself that space to breathe. For me, I think I didn't plan it, but somehow this year I've managed to give a talk every quarter. So I give a talk last quarter, this quarter, and then next quarter. And I think that's actually a very good pace for
Yeah,
talks. Yeah, that's a good
that's
pace.
what I want.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, Rizal, everyone wants to invite you for their talk or for their event, and you're probably just reaching out to you.
No, but I don't know why I always apply to a whole bunch of them. Like I always get nervous and I'm like, I need to apply to a whole bunch of conferences. And then all of them say you got in. And then I'm like, oh my
Wow, now that's interesting to see you at least find time to balance the conference and not wear yourself out. And now you work at TBD as a developer advocate. So how was that like? How was that transition like from GitHub to, you know, TBD, especially since Web 5 is kind of like a new territory for you? How did that, you know, go?
Yeah, it is a big transition for me, 'cause GitHub is something I've always been familiar with as long as I've been a software engineer, And yeah, like you said, like the whole Web 5 aspect was it could be difficult to wrap your head around, but I have a really good team in general, and I like to do research, I like to learn in general. So I really just sat down and just like explored, built with the tools until I would be able to understand it. And one thing that also helped is like immediately when I joined, we ended up having a bunch of hackathons. Like I think we had like three hackathons back to back. So a lot of people were coming in our Discord asking questions. And when they asked those questions, that led me to be like, I'm not sure, but let me like try to build out what they were saying or help them troubleshoot or debug. And that helped me to ramp up, or I got to like, or I decided, hey, I'm gonna write a blog post to answer some of their questions. And then another thing that's been a big transition is our team is responsible for the documentation, whereas GitHub, we had our own documentation team. So learning how to write documentation was a transition for me as well, but I think it's good because it helps me to understand like the different changes that are happening within our SDK and how everything works.
Yeah, I can imagine it must have been a lot of learnings and learnings and learnings to just, meet up pre when people are asking questions, you kind of want to also know more about Web 5. So how exactly do you deal with imposter syndrome, knowing that this is a new territory? Have you ever felt that, okay, people will probably expect me to know the answer to this question. Maybe I need to research. So how do you balance reaching out to people when you feel that imposter syndrome with withdrawing and just keeping things to yourself?
Okay, I've had some past software engineering jobs where I kind of it's not like my imposter syndrome is gone, but I kind of feel more callous when I get that feeling. It doesn't really bother me as much 'cause some software engineering jobs I had, they was pretty mean when I will like not know the answer to things. So now I kind of like don't care. Like if someone asks me a question, I don't know the answer to it, I usually tell them like, "Hey, I'm not really sure. I haven't come across this problem yet, but I'm gonna try to find the answer." So I think for me, just being honest or vulnerable just helps rather than me trying to pretend that I'm an expert, because I'm never gonna be like a super expert on anything.
Yeah, I like that, being honest and vulnerable. Yeah, I think that's also key. When people realize that you're honest and you clearly do not know stuff, they'll be more willing to tell you if they know or explain or point you to the right direction than you just acting like you know it all. Yeah, that makes sense. Now you work with Angie, and yeah, so how was that? Had you worked with her prior to TBD, or how she reached out to you, I believe? Or how exactly did that did that work out?
I never worked with her before. It's really
Okay.
fun. I like my team. It's a I think we all work really, really well together. I think initially like she had a job opening like maybe a year before and she reached
Okay.
out to me. But then for this current job opening, I reached back out to
Oh,
her or
nice.
I think I reached out to my friend Nick. So there's actually a couple of people on the team that I've interacted with before. So Nick De Jesus, he was a mentor at the coding boot camp that I attended, and Ebony, who's on my team, she was also in the coding boot camps at a different cohort, a following cohort. So it's been really a good transition because it's like I already knew and worked with a lot of these people. And Angie, she's really cool, calm, like she encourages us to do our best work. She's a really great leader.
That's nice to hear. That's nice to hear. And with people that you've met, because you mentioned a couple of names now, how exactly do you handle networking? For someone like me, I probably do not network as much as I would love to, because I kind of feel that if I maybe reach out to people and I don't really have that rapport with them, it may seem a bit unauthentic, to say the least, right? So how do you kind of make networking more natural and yeah, more natural when you meet people that you've probably never worked with?
Oh, wait, can you expand? Do you mean like when you first start a job or
No,
just
not when you first start a job, just like interacting on Twitter, meeting people, going for a
got
coffee chat. How exactly do you network? Do you have a plan to meet people, or how do you grow that network?
Gotcha. I think when I first started off in tech, I was a little bit more intentional about my networking. It was easier because everything was in person, so I would like go to meetups and just like interact with people through that. I think now most of my networking isn't as intentional, but like I guess just through Twitter. Like I think once you start like someone like your tweet and you like it back, like I think that even happened with me and Angie. Like I noticed. Like I like a couple of her tweets, she liked a couple of my tweets. I'm like, okay, me and Angie are like maybe she thought I was funny or we're on the same page with this thought or
Yeah.
whatever. And then after a while you feel more comfortable to like maybe comment on their tweet. And then, you know, it kind of goes from there. Usually people may be more bold and they DM me and then I'll DM them back. But I'm not, I wish I was more intentional now. I'm not as intentional with networking as I used to be. But I just like leverage Twitter, LinkedIn. I think what also helps is when I post a lot of, when I did post a lot more blog posts, people got to see like my train of thought, how I was thinking about code or how I was thinking about my career. And I think it allowed them to connect with me through that as well.
Awesome. Yeah, that makes sense. Kind of liking and then going to maybe commenting and then DMs. Yeah, so
Yeah,
it's more or less
it's more
like very
natural.
progressive.
Yeah. It's natural rather than me just like
Yeah.
go into the DM. There are a couple people like maybe if I need them to be kind of like you did with me. I mean, we already had
Yeah.
connected. But if I need them to be on my live stream or my podcast, I'll just cold email them and be like, "Hey, need you to be on this, or can you please be on this?" But it's I'm not super intentional about like making sure I get to connected with
Yeah,
specific people.
I think I like the natural approach as well, just kind of progressing from maybe liking to commenting. It kind of makes you like a warm lead, so to say. So if you have to reach out to them, it's not like anything so new. Okay, so we're gradually wrapping up now, and as a woman of color in tech, I'll say, what are some of the things that you've learned? I know about 2 months back, I put in on my YouTube channel, I had a video where I talked about 5 things that I learned working in tech. So, as a fellow woman of color in tech, what are some of the things that you've learned on your journey so far?
Yeah, I learned that like you really gotta advocate for yourself. At least in like past jobs I've had, or some of them, not GitHub or TBD, but some past jobs I had, they weren't really looking out for me. They maybe was looking out more for people who they connected with more, or looked like them. So I had to learn to like make sure my goals were known and that like my work was what I got done was known as well. Wait, how many things you said? Five things?
No, I just meant
Wait, it's just a lot.
no, any amount. I just mentioned that I shared 5 things, but definitely anything. No, there's
Oh.
no limit. There's no number to it. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to remember.
Was like, wait, I don't know if I got five off the top of
No,
my head.
just any.
Okay, maybe I'll do one more, but
Okay.
advocating for yourself I think is important. And then let me see what is another one. I think another one for me, maybe not everybody will agree with this, but I think there's so many companies out there that if there's a company you're at and if you find it to be a toxic environment or not helping with your growth, what I learned is I should just leave. Sorry, I got like a really sore throat right now.
No worries.
But I just learned that I should just leave because there's other companies out there that will like really nurture my growth and invest in me. So if I feel like they're not investing in me as much, I can go where I need to be. That's it.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Interestingly, the one you mentioned, the first one, is like my all-time big, quotes. Just being your own biggest advocate, because I think that as women of color or even people of color generally in tech, you have to ensure that whatever you're doing, yeah, putting it loud, and it has to be very obvious because no one is going to advocate for you if you just fold your hands and you're not doing anything. You have to literally put in the work and then be your own biggest advocate. So I can totally relate to that. And wrapping up, is are there any final thoughts you want to share to just anyone looking to start their career in tech? Any things you want to say to advise them?
I will say, you gotta be persistent. I think right now the job market is a little bit tough, but like all the stuff we talked about, like networking, like keep doing that, keep putting yourself out there, keep learning in public. And I think that persistence will eventually pay off. And it's going to be a transferable skill, anyways, because when you're dealing with anything technical, whether it's code or whatever, you do need to be persistent, anyways. It can be pretty frustrating sometimes, to deal with bugs. So, yeah. Just keep
Okay.
being persistent, keep pushing on.
Keep pushing on, keep being persistent. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Rizal, for sharing. It's been so amazing having you on the podcast, and I've learned a lot and, getting to know you more. So I'm sure a lot of people that are watching, listening would have gotten a thing or two from our conversation. So thank you. All
Thank
right,
you.
so and thank you too for watching. And if you haven't watched any of our last episodes from the previous season, please go back and please watch it. And if you enjoyed this video, don't forget to hit a like if you really enjoyed it. Until next time, I'll see you in another episode. Bye.